here with Jason Han for Screen Cheese Radio. So Jason, how were you first introduced to dubstep?
How was I first introduced to it? I've been hearing it sort of develop for a long time. I used to be way into like Lee Scratch Perry and the whole dub movement, and then in the UK it was like a bunch of years ago when dubstep made its first rounds, but it was a lot more like ambient then, and it wasn't really that gnarly and stuff. It was more something you'd chill out to or something, and then it just started getting, you know, gnarlier pretty recent in the past 5 years or something like that. And now it's had this full, you know, second wave of coming about, and now people are just trying to get as grimy and as raging as possible. It's a force, yeah.
Cool. Who are some of your favorite dubstep artists?
Dubstep artists: Excision, SPL. Let's see. Could really go down the line. There's the UK guys, Caspa and Rusko, Nero. Let me think. DZ. All the stuff on Rotten Records, which is Excision's record label.
Yeah.
So it list goes on.
Do you ever get tired of the low frequency womps?
Not so much. You know what? It was there's some guys I've heard lately who are just, you know, into this gnarly bass sound and kind of minimalist, but like going really super hectic with just the bass sounds and the wobble bass.
Yeah.
And then after a while, that sort of dulls my attention span. Like trying to be so gnarly that you sort of don't get affected, you know, as much by it. So I love the stuff that's more ebb and flow. You know, it's like it gets super gnarly and it breaks down and it travels a little place and then hits you again in the face. And
cool.
That's the pacing I like.
Who is DJ Massive Prophet?
Oh, man. Prophet Massive.
Oh, Prophet Massive.
Yeah, come on. Get it right. that's my sort of DJ set. And I've only done one under that name. That was out at Schwagstock, out at Camp Zoo. And that was fun as hell. You know, I went from like 4:30 in the morning to 6 in the morning. And I had a really good time. So I'm going to do it again out in Los Angeles, or out in Long Beach on like November 5th. And then I might do an after show next time Yodo plays in Boulder, Colorado. So we'll see how it goes down. I had a really fun time doing it. So it's and then maybe by the time I do it as an after show, I'll have some of my own tracks in there too. Yeah.
So for those who don't know, you record all your shows and put them on livedownloads.com where they can be downloaded. How are your sales for that? Do people actually buy the shows?
Oh, yeah. And you know, it's not like a ton. Maybe it averages just a few per show, you know, depending on who's there. And, you know, we can kind of tell who's buying shows on a regular basis as opposed to just people buying one show in one city because they were there. So it's not lucrative by any means, but it's, you know, you see it kind of building all the time. Or if we have a big show, you know, in the 600 plus range or something like that, then we get quite a large amount. And then our biggest shows downloaded have been when we've had Kang and Kyle on board, because I mean that's just people that actively seek that stuff.
Yeah.
And most of the electronic scene, it's kind of like once it gets out there, it immediately goes online and everyone can download it. So we're not super stressed about it, but we know we just want to make it available.
Cool. I know you're coming out with a new CD, Fire the Lasers.
Oh, yeah.
What was your motivation for recording another CD?
Well, just like with any project, having something that, you know, sort of makes a statement about, you know, where you're at right now. And our live shows do that for us. But when we're in the studio, we get a chance to do something a little bit different. We get to just work on one song at a time. We still record it in our same sort of improvised way, except that it's more like we listen to a lot of music first and we decide what kind of track we want to go for. And we listen to those sounds and take some time tweaking our own library of sounds. And then at some point we hit record and, you know, we use all that. We record for about 10 minutes and then try to take, say, the best 4 minutes of those 10 minutes. So it's still completely, you know, improvised and us doing our thing.
How hard is it to create the music when there's no crowd in the studio? Because I know you play to the crowd a lot.
Oh, yeah. Very different. But, you know, since we're listening to a track, that's a little bit of where our inspiration comes from. That's where our motivation is at. We listen to that track, and then we listen to what we did. We're like, did it even live up to, you know, what we expected? And so there, you know, it's more compare contrast. Right. When we're in front of a crowd, it's like, what's going to make them, you know, dance the hardest at this moment?
Have your past CDs sold well, or is most of your income from touring?
Oh, most of our income is from touring. That's any group, actually. You know, most of any group's income is from touring, and that's from you know, Madonna on to Michael Jackson on down the line. But we, you know, we do okay. Most of our sales come from like iTunes and things like that. But when we're, you know, traveling around, maybe we sell a few CDs a night. But it's not something we're like we're actively like, okay, you guys, everyone go to the merch table, buy our stuff, and go there. We just have it with us all the time, and people find out about it.
How has yours and Travis's equipment setup changed since your last tour?
Let me think. Since the last tour, what have we added? Travis has a little magnetic keyboard that he plays with a pen. Looks like he's taking notes, but it's you know, just depending on where the magnet's on whatever key, it kind of makes that the pitch of that key. Definitely doing a lot more vocals on both our ends and combining different effects than last time, and we're probably doing a lot more than we did the last, because probably when we were here last time, we had probably just started doing it, so we didn't know what we were doing. Now we have a better idea of what we're doing, so we're a little more adventurous with that. And we definitely tweaked our setup just as a matter of, you know, making things more present and more, you know, whenever we're doing sound check, we're always trying to dial it in to have, you know, this humongous sound. And that's made a difference. And it's not necessarily something we've added, only in that our knowledge of what we want it to sound like, you know, from the stage.
Cool. Well, that brings me to my next question. What equipment do you use to produce the vocoder sounds, and what words do you say?
Oh, well, let's see. And I'll do Travis's world first. He uses a keyboard called the MS-2000. And that's an actual vocoder. And, you know, so he plays a chord on the keyboard or a note on the keyboard, and then he says or sings something at the same time, and then it kind of combines the sound of the synthesizer and his voice. That's the vocoder. And let's see, in my world, I use a Roland pedal pitch shifter to make my voice sound, you know, either low or high, you know, or really just to make it sound something other than my regular voice. And then I programmed an effect that lets my voice sort of sound like AM radio or something. And different delays to dub out my voice to do something, you know, kind of, what's it called, like in the mode of some kind of dub, loose scratch fairy type thing. And then as far as words, Travis will throw in words. He's working on actual rapping. And you got to listen really close, but he gets a storyline in there. And I'm just making, you know, I'm just making up stuff, you know, just syllables put together rhythmically and with a melody. I've been around a lot of world music, and a lot of the DJ music I like Spangl, where they'll put in something, you know, from some other country. Maybe it's a sample of a traditional village or something like that. And I sort of like that approach, that you can take that world and bring it into what we're doing. And I just go, as you know, sometimes I'll try to go for an Indian thing, sometimes I'll go for an African thing, sometimes an alien thing, and just try to mix it up. And then once in a while, I mean, I'll just throw in some tees from some popular song a long time ago or recent.
Cool. Yero has a significant Facebook and MySpace following.
Oh, yeah.
So who maintains these pages, and how have social networking websites helped you connect with fans and gain exposure for Yodo?
It's been really good. Our Yodo Facebook is mostly, I'm checking in on it with our publicity people. If they're more, say, on top of it, like if something comes in, they usually forward it to me. And whenever they or we get like contests going with it, they're monitoring what's going on, and they'll send me the question to answer, and then I'll answer the question, or then it'll be some vote on, you know, which question is the best to ask, and then I'll answer it somewhere down the line. So our publicity company is in it as far as details and quite a few of the announcements, but I'll send them stuff when something is ready to be announced too. So, and then same for the MySpace, we just try to keep it all coordinated. But you know, people, I think they feel like they're in touch, you know, because more people are joining it on a regular basis.
If you had to pick only two pieces of equipment to keep from your own setup, what would they be?
Wow, you mean like God?
Like pick two drums or pick two?
Oh man. Wow, probably just the kick and snare. I could do pretty much any gig just with the kick and snare and make it happen. But you know, everything's pretty essential. If I don't have the pitch shifter, which I didn't have the other night, you know, I feel sort of naked because I can't. There's all on the Yoda gig. It's all about getting some other sound out, trying to do something different so it doesn't sound like what you just did. So you got to have we feel like we have to have as many of those. So there's just something else coming you know, the audience, and then we put our own flavor on it.
What was it like for all six of you of the String Cheese Incident to be back together in the same room during practice?
Oh, that was amazing. It really was, because we had almost not seen each other in the same room for almost 2 years. So getting back together was great. People had gone out and been doing their own thing, so it was just really, you know, a little bit surreal to be in the same room. Like, wow, we're actually here, you know, after talking on conference calls and things like that, and everyone being so separated for a while. And, you know, Kyle's got a new baby and been doing that, and Keith has his two kids, Billy's been doing the family thing, and, you know, so it's a lot of, you know, grow time in between that short period of time that we were apart.
Yeah. The Rockbury Cheese Show is one of the best shows I've ever been to. From your perspective, how are the Cheese and Yoda shows? And did they go as expected, or were they better than you expected?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the String Cheese Show, we knew that was our going to be our one show in the entire year. We know, you know, there was no slacking off on it. So we really tried to, you know, practice hard for it and try to get songs as dialed in as possible. Parts that we didn't remember from songs, we tried to do something different, and everyone was all about trying to do something, somehow make it fresh for all of us, because we weren't going to be adding new songs per se. So what can we do with the material that we had to make it feel fresh and feel like we were still jumping off a cliff, you know, and taking the audience with us? And that was pretty important. And we didn't pull off, you know, a lot of the things that we practiced. And so to go out there and feel like, you know, we gave it our best shot, it went over well, and, you know, production-wise, it felt like it felt like a success, and it felt like, well, if we are going to do shows together, we really want them to be like that, as far as putting our best foot forward, whatever we got, try to get as close to, you know, what we rehearsed as possible, and basically be prepared and be super on whenever we go out, as opposed to doing a tour where, you know, the whole tour you're sort of practicing getting the chemistry together, and then you have one kind of amazing show that stands out. But we really want to try and make it to where, you know, every time we get on the stage, every single show is just like flat out, you know, the most incredible experience that could be had. That sets the bar pretty high, you know, but that's what you go for every night, and you go for that every night anyways. But, you know, to play a limited number of shows means that much more pressure to go out and really deliver every single night.
What was your favorite festival of the summer and why?
Favorite festivals? Rockbury definitely jumps out. And man, Yoda played the Shambhala Festival. That's up in Canada. And that was just like, whoa. That's such an incredible festival with so much, you know, inspiration to be had. It's mostly DJs, very few bands. A lot of them are from the UK and Australia and Canada, so not as much influence from the States. So automatically you're sort of transported into a different world and different, you know, types of stimulus. And all the stages there, just the way they take care of that festival is phenomenal. The stages are permanently there, and they add on to them every year. And, you know, some are in the forest, some are out in the open, some are by the, you know, the river, the beach stage. And it's really an amazing experience. And also, I was going to say, as far as, like, Eodo at Rothbury, there was, I mean, you could feel the energy of Rothbury as, like, everyone had to step up their game. Everyone was bringing their, you know, their strongest game to it. And after playing the String Cheese show on Friday, you know, we're like, woof, we, you know, it felt like we really cleared the hurdle there. We all felt really good about our playing. And then playing Eodo the next night, you know, we're seeing all these amazing bands during the day. And, you know, like Simon Possford goes on just before us, and we're like, we got to step it up. And you feel that. Right, it's a good, you know, it's a good pressure to feel like you got to come up to that. And we felt like we really delivered there too. So,
is there any temptation to put like an Eodo drums jam in the middle of a Cheese song or something?
Not so much. I mean, that's such another setup, and you know, I don't know. We talked about some, you know, different types of things, but that hasn't really come up. I think we're comfortable leaving it, you know, really different. And if we go into drums, maybe we'll do something like that. But some of the fun part about, you know, String Cheese is that we have this whole other palette of, you know, music to explore. But at Rothbury, we definitely, there were some things I ended up programming, like in Joyful Sound, that we got some of the electronic stuff in there. And it's not, you know, like dominating the whole set. It's just like some, you know, get it in there, and we all felt in the band that it was one of those things, one of those other moments where it's like, let's just do something different and, you know, get out of our, you know, own box. Everyone has that creative bug to, you know, push it to somewhere else. But it's no indication, like, you know, String Cheese is going to be any, you know, more electronic or less. But definitely to have new ideas, always being able to circulate around, is a good thing.
Any plans for Eodo New Year's Eve show?
Man, we are working on it. So, well, right, you know, we've had Miami in our sights for a long time, and you know, we're so close to making an announcement on that, but we gotta wait a little bit. And then hopefully the plan is the week after New Year's, going down to Cancun and playing down in Cancun. If you know, if we're lucky, I don't know if it'll come together. We'd love to go over to Cuba and somehow play there. You know, there's obstacles in the way, but that whole area is a little bit, you know, muddy. Nothing's concrete, but, you know, definitely there's things we'd love to be able to do right around that time.
And I've heard rumors about Horning's Hideout and Red Rocks for String Cheese this summer. You share any info on that?
Yeah, it'd be great to give you, like, an official radio scoop. And I've told some people just who casually ask. It's not, but I think without the band releasing the information as like an official thing, I probably won't do it.
All right. Off the record then.
All right.
Finally, who is Alvin the Sponge Chipmunk?
Oh, wow. Damn. I always forget the name of the guy that brings it. It is Justin, huh? But, you know, we're down. I like Alvin. Someone brings Alf once in a while. We've got Alf on the stage. So we're pro animated character dolls on the stage.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Jason. And that's it, Jeremy, for String Cheese Radio.
Cool.